Hi, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Carolyn Talks for the So Here's What Happened podcast. And today I'm joined by a special guest, writer and director Howie Ding, whose film I saw at the 2021 Toronto International Film Festival. It's called Terrorizers, and it's, I can't even describe exactly what genre it is. I'm calling it romance, psychological thriller, comedy slightly. But before we get into the film, I'm going to ask Weeding to just speak a bit about himself and about the film, because maybe he'll probably give a better description of what it is than I can. Weeding?
Oh, hi. I'm a filmmaker from Taiwan. I'm actually a Malaysian. I was born in Malaysia, and I spent 2 years in Toronto when I was very young. Toronto Film Festival was my first film festival in my life. So so I guess I have a special connection with Toronto. So my first film, Pinoy Sunday, was premiered in Toronto. And then the second one is City of Lasting, was in Toronto also. So this is my third film. Officially my third film, and the third time coming to Toronto. So it's been great. And
I think that's actually kind of funny, because I live in Toronto now. I'm originally from Barbados, but I live in Toronto now, and the TIFF is actually my first film festival too. I first attended in 2017.
I'm much older than you are. I'm sorry, you know, it's just I watched 50 films in 10 days when what? I was young. 51 films. Back then, it was a day when you have to line up on Yonge Street. There wasn't any light box, big building. I remember there's Eaton Center, there's a Yonge Street, and then you have Uptown Theater, and then people lining up, and you go from theater to theater. That's my day, yeah.
Well, actually, I can't even like thinking, because I kind of do something similar. Like, I will legit binge watch dramas for a whole day straight. I've done multiple dramas where there are like 16, 18 episodes in one day. So I feel you.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So so we'll get into Terrorizers now. I love this film, and I love one of the things I love about it is not what I was expecting at all when I started it, because I went into it thinking, I don't know why, the name, for one thing, made me think it was going to be a horror. The name and the poster, because all you have is this eye peeping through a door, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be creepy. We're going to have like some insidious thing happening. And it is something insidious happening, but not in the way you expect, and it's very subtly implied. And I just love that. So the film is about these four characters whose lives are interconnected, but not in a way that we can immediately discern. So there's Yufang, played by Moon Lee, Ming Liang, played by Po Kyung Lin, Xiao Jiang, played by JC Lin, and Monica, played by Annie Chen. And what I love about these characters is they're their own people, and we get to know a bit about them separate from their relationships to each other. And I think that's really interesting, because I think they're how getting to know them as individual characters actually plays a huge part in how the whole everything comes together at first, because you think you like their connections are not immediately obvious. And I gotta say, your editing in this film is impeccable, and I just love how the editing plays a part in getting to know these characters. So can you just can you talk a bit about drafting the characters and building them and building the story around them?
Well, it's one of those things that it's very hard to talk to you about the process. It's very instinctive. You know, it's one of those things that, because I had this treatment a long time ago when I was young, and then I wasn't thinking I would make it. And then after Cities of Last Things, because also playing with time, I kind of really like the film medium having to play with time, because I think you can play with the audience expectation, perspective, and everything. I had so much fun with the last film. And people were like, oh my God, this is it, you know, like this. I'm like, oh, cool, let's play with them again. Mm-hmm. With that in mind, I just remember I used to have this kind of treatments. I take it out and then kind of polish it in 1 or 2 months. And then after that, we did casting. And but we did casting a year before. So basically, it's one of those things that while you're doing casting, you're revising the script.
Mm.
You know, Lim Po Hong as Ming Liang, the scene when he was in the police station, like looking at the police, very quiet, he did that in audition. So I get inspired. I stole that bit into my script. So it's more like you do the casting, you do the writing at the same time. I mean, of course, you had the structure first. You have the first draft first, and then you do the casting. While you're doing the casting, when you see Moon Lee, you start shaping the Yifan character like with the script. You know, go back and forth. But the script was pretty long, and then during production, the AD was like, you know, you gotta cut it down. We only have 45 days. We don't have budget. You have too many scenes. And then me and AD also happened to be a filmmaker, also we do another phase of rewrite, meaning that slim down. And then during post productions, we revise it again. What you see right now is different from the script in terms of the structure, but this film is really unique. Like even for me, I mean, I have experience making film. Like even as a film, I think it's really crazy because you can have endless possibilities. You know, at some point we're like, maybe we should do linear way, and then we're like, no, you know, and then they go back and forth, and then it's just like you can never end this editing because every time you switch something else happens. So yeah, we had a hard time doing editing for a couple of months, like close to 3 or 4 months, and the rough cut was 3.5 hours.
Yeah, because that was actually one of my questions, because the way how this is edited, I think it's edited perfectly, and like what you added, what you kept, like gives us so much subcontext. This film has a lot of subcontext with regards to the things people do more than what they say. Like if you hear what they're saying, but then you watch what they're doing, and then what you're getting is two different things. And so the editing really plays on that. But 3.5 hours, I would love to actually see the full edit, because I'm just like wondering all of the scenes that we didn't get to see, like especially for, I think, for Ming Liang, because he's a stalker, and he moves very silently, and he's so observant, and he's watching all of these people. And while I was watching, I was wondering, what exactly did we get? Did we not see him watching? Like, who did we not see him watching? Could there have been more than the three women? Because there's also Kiki, there's Yufeng and Monica. So I'm like wondering, he seems to me the kind of obsessive person, the kind of obsessive man that any brief interaction he has a woman where necessarily she looks at him directly, he like sees that as a connection forming and becomes immediately obsessed with them. So I was wondering, like, could there have been like 2-3 other women that he's doing the same, that he's done the same thing with, and if there were scenes that could have implied that?
No. I mean, the good thing about Ming Liang character is we didn't cut him much.
Mm.
Yeah, it's only this. I mean, we are cutting down, not because we are cutting down the story, it's because we're cutting down the process.
Oh, okay.
You know, the story is still the same.
Mm-hmm.
It just there are a lot more going on within them, so it's not like we're cutting down all the female characters and all that. Yeah, so it's still same as the script. It just the structure is a bit different, and then the dynamic chemistry is a bit different. Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, so it's like we put Xiao Zhang all the way at the end as a chapter, but before he was a bit more like in the beginning. But we feel like he might take away the tension of Ming Liang and Yufeng, so we just kind of kind of moved them to the back. Yeah, something like that. But it's one of those editing that, yeah, I mean, I was having fun. Like even though, like every time when I say I was having fun, that means in the process it was really painful. When you are in that process, it was just like, you know, you're in pain. But now when you're looking back, it's actually a very nice thing. Yeah.
Yeah, so. I can imagine the process is like painful. Like I am no professional editor, but just editing like for the podcast and like my YouTube channel is just like pain. I record for half an hour, 45 minutes, and it takes me like 4 or 5 hours to edit something because I'm trying to cut out all the small little things. And like, I always have like supreme respect for editors and stuff. But once I started doing this, I'm just like, I did not have enough respect because I did not understand.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah.
It is. Oh my gosh. But you so I want to talk a bit now about Yufeng, because her character is very interesting to me, because I write her character as being the linchpin for the entire plot, because a lot of things that she experiences and things that she's afraid of is actually what leads to things. I think it's kind of like a connection for everyone, because she's afraid of being abandoned, and she's afraid of falling in love, and she's afraid of forming close connections. But these three things, I think in particular, actually play into her relationships with, quote unquote, with everyone. So like for her boyfriend, Xiao Jiang, she's afraid of being abandoned because of what happened with her mother and her father. And then we later find out Monica, because of the way you edit it, like we had no idea that she has that kind of connection with Monica. So when there's that scene where she's discussing being afraid of being left alone with Xiao Jiang, that's when I realize, oh wait, she's also talking about Monica. So this is three people she's actually been abandoned by. And that abandonment is very fresh and super painful for her. And I just thought it was interesting after getting that revelation, how easy she also fell into relationship with him, because I think she needed that time. She was looking for another connection with someone because she doesn't want to be alone. She's, even though she's afraid of being abandoned, even though she's afraid of getting into another relationship where she could be hurt, she wanted to be in a relationship because she didn't want to be alone. So it's kind of like this dichotomy in her personality. So can you talk a bit about that?
I think people do that now. People in the city, you know, I mean, young people or the people living in the city, it's always, you know, you are jam-packed with all the people, crowded, you know. I mean, like Asian cities are crowded, you know, well, before COVID. So it's like so crowded, but people are lonely in general, because so for Yufeng, I thought it was a good way to show what young people are now, because they are so insecure. Mm-hmm. Maybe because now they don't have a lot of siblings now, you know, like 10 to be one, or like one kid, two kids. So she's alone, and she feels very insecure. But because she's lonely and she's insecure, everything is need for her, you know. Sometimes you don't know whether she go out with Xiao Tong is because she like him or she just need to have someone with her, you know. And even with Monica, it's the same thing. It might not be her like sexual like orientation. It could be just she just need to be with someone, mm-hmm. you know, for her. And also she likes to help out Monica, because for me, when you help people, you get things back.
Yeah.
You know, when you offer your hand, people take your hands, you feel the warmth of your like people's hand. This is how lonely she is. She just want to grab something, you know, and that's her character throughout the whole thing. And I think this is the hardest character to play, because she has no clear motivation like Ming Liang, like, you know, like Monica. She's always going here, going there, not sure what's going on, follow them. But yet she know clearly what she wants. You know, when she sees something, she's trying to grab it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how desperate she is, you know. That's a loneliness, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, it's loneliness. And I also think she comes across as the kind of person who will form emotional and romantic attractions to anyone that she sees, like as you said, like she that gives back to her. Whereas she's kind of similar to Ming Liang in that way, in that how he becomes obsessive, but she's kind of like the positive aspect. Like she gives love and she gives patience and she gives time, whereas he's obsessive. He wants the person, he wants to possess the person. So they're kind of like, I saw them, they're like almost not mirror images, they're like two sides of the same coin. One is corrupt and one is pure, as I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great thing about film is you kind of throw out the questions people have answered. You know, it's I always love, I think a good film is when people watch it, they have a different interpretation about characters,
mm-hmm.
because based on their own experience, they can put it on those characters. They can identify, sympathize with those characters based on different backgrounds, you know. So it's I'm sure a lot of people can interpret like Yufeng character in different ways,
mm-hmm.
you know, as long as we give them enough guidance, know, as long as the direction is clear enough. Yeah, your explanation of the character, I think, is right on. Yeah.
Thanks. And I wanted to know, Monica. Monica is something else. And Monica, and I don't mean it in a bad way, but I think to me, Monica is, she's, I don't, the word that's coming to my mind right now is succubus, but I don't want to use that because it, that kind of has a negative connotation. Whereas these, all of these characters do want something from each other, whether they know it or not. And they're all taking something from each other, as I said, whether they know it or not. And Monica, she wants fame. She wants to make it as an actress. She wants, you know, she wants to be known as having a talent. But in one of the first scenes with her is like, you can see she really doesn't have the talent for acting. She doesn't, she's unable to memorize her lines. She gets her cues from Yu Fang. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When she, like for her boyfriend, she owes him rent and she expects him to still keep giving, even though she's not giving back anything. And even though they're broken up, she still expects him to cover for her. And then when eventually things start to fall apart because of the porn video, which I'm going to get into, she again goes, Yu Fang comes to her rescue. And that's how their romantic relationship begins. And as you said, like for Yu Fang, you're not really sure what she, if she, as you said, like if she's bisexual, if that's just an emotional thing that she can, that she does with people. But for Monica, I saw that as her saying like, this is me giving back in return for what I, for what you're doing for me. I kind of saw her as a similar character to Lady Xiao, the masseuse, where she gives Ming Liang the massage as thanks. And I kind of saw Monica doing the same thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she's, I think she's, I mean, you know what? I think those characters in my film, there's some crazy quality is called, they're quite brave.
Mm.
I mean, Ming Liang is brave to do what he's doing. Monica is brave of what she, I mean, they, because they just want to have something. They just want to reach something. I mean, Ming Liang is going some, you know, they're using something extreme, but Monica is, you know, like for me, she's not as fragile as we think she is.
Mm.
Because sometimes when you see, you know, there's a moment of like of a close up, you kind of know that she is thinking about something.
Yeah.
You know, it's like she is kind of manipulative. She's not, you know, she looks sad. She look, you know, weak. She look angry. She get bullied by her boyfriend. But sometimes you feel like, you know, I mean, she kissed a woman. She told her that, you know, now we are together. And then next thing you know, she's going to meet a guy in the five. I mean, she doesn't care. You know, she has that thing going on. It's like, I want a great future. You know, this is what I want. I'm just going to go for it. That's the drive from Monica. Mm. You know, that's a crazy drive that you see. You sometimes see people in the society. They all share the same drive. You know, and I think she's similar to Ming Liang, I think, sometimes. Yeah. So.
Yeah, she is. Because like you mentioned her physicality, which is, I think, and also a similarity she and Ming Liang have. Because, Annie Chen, who plays Monica, she's very thin and she has this very fragile appearance. And you mentioned that, and when you think about it, Ming Liang has the same thing. He looks very unassuming. He looks very, you know, he looks like a gamer, you know, like somebody who stays inside all day and just plays game. He's thin, he's gaunt, he's pale, he wears like these baggy sweaters and pants, and like he looks very unassuming, which is always never, people when it comes to stalkers, never take appearance, never underestimate them because of their appearance, which is something that happens, I think, with Lady Xiao. She underestimates him. But you talk about their physicality. Can you just, like, did that play a part in your casting? Because like they're deceptive in their appearance for these characters. Like people underestimate them. Like for Monica, especially, people think like they only see her as this, as a victim, or as a sex symbol because of the porn video. But as I mentioned, she's very calculating and very manipulative, and she knows when to leave when things are starting to get hot, because she does not come to Yu Fang's rescue at the end when she could have helped resolve that entire issue. She did not.
right. Yeah. So that's for me. It's Monica. And also when we do casting, I did ask her to watch Blue Jasmine by Woody Allen.
Yeah.
You know, Cate Blanchett was destroying herself throughout the whole film. You know, that's the reference we actually look at just to know what kind of character that Monica have, you know. And then she constantly trying to do something which just make her, you know, I mean, just she believed herself so much. Yeah. So.
Yeah, no, it worked because she's all about her. She has a goal and she's going to achieve that goal regardless. And which I think is a very admirable trait for someone like her, because once the porn video is released or is re-released, I should say, she doesn't shy away. Like when men start to say things to her, she like looks at them and she doesn't back down. She doesn't get ashamed, and she, you know, she doesn't run away. She's just like, are you talking about this one? Like, kind of like putting the shame on them, because she's like, why should I be ashamed of doing this when I'll clearly you're not afraid to talk about it, right? Which I think is also something I think the film kind of does very subtly, is the discussions of how men perceive women. And, you know, like women that do, like who work in the sex industry are expected to be ashamed of what they're doing. But the men who watch these women or who take part in the sex work, they're not shamed. You know, like for her boyfriend, he is not, he's trying to make her feel ashamed for what she did, but he is not stigmatized for doing what he did. So just talk a bit about that part of the film, because I think it's very subtly and it's very subtle, and some people might miss it, but it was just like, this is actually pretty genius, because the whole film kind of talks about how men perceive women, how men become obsessed with women, and like this idea and this fantasy they have of women, but without actually knowing them.
I just think that there are more people spending their time. There are two worlds now. One is real world. One is the virtual world. So the gamer, they play game all day long, but also they go to internet. You know, they attack people. You know, there's a word called incel. You know, they are like, you know, and also I'm sure they watch porn. You know, it's like you're in the room all day long, you're doing all the activities. It just, you know, like sooner or later, you're going to have a different kind of perception about things. You know, it's not just talking about the men in general. It's more about, you know, how this kind of thing can actually like distort your sense of the reality. Because I'm not saying that, you know, all the men are like that. I'm just saying that for people who spend 24 hours in internet looking at, I don't know what, you know, sooner or later, you're going to think the world is going to, you know, you can actually use the rules in the game to apply to the real life. You know, if you can use the video game, the rule of the video game, trying to apply to real life, you could just basically, like whatever you see in the porn video, you're going to think that it might be like that in real life, you know. So this is a thing that I try to reflect, you know, just to, and also there's a thing called cam girl. I mean, cam girl now it's a big phenomenon. It's yes. Like girls actually, it's willing to do that. You know, it's not like what you think of the old day, people are forced to do this. Now young kids are doing a lot of things, you know, I mean, like willingly, you know. So it's like, this is the thing they're going to put on the show. They think they're going to get some hits, they get some money, they can earn money that way. So sometimes they don't have shame about themselves being by having the video showing to people. So this is one of the things I'm trying to like reflect, you know. I'm not trying to focus just on one thing. I'm just saying, you know, the society, I mean, there's a lot of things in society right now are going crazy. It just people don't really realize that, you know, the video game thing, the internet thing, it really make an impact on people's life, you know.
Yeah, because there's a new a platform called OnlyFans, which is where they do that, you know. You have and it's not only just women, it's like men, women, people of all genders and sexual orientations. They use OnlyFans as a source of income, and it's about sex work, and not all of it is explicit. And I kind of saw like Monica being kind of a bit like that, because her content, what we saw, wasn't explicit, and it all has to do with the, and this I think kind of ties into the editing of the film, which I think was, as I said, impeccable. I just love the editing for this film, because the way these scenes for her video are shot, the way how you edit back exterior moments and things that weren't connected to that, like it puts like the audience or those watching for her into the space. So like we have you have like Ming Liang and Yu Fang, and they're able to, you know, like put themselves into this space because like they see themselves interacting with Monica, which is again where there's another similarity between them, because they can both become infatuated with her because they saw her video, but they saw sight from two different perspectives. And then there is this scene where I think it's so brilliantly edited, where like it's like the door is opening and you think that the person is going into her room at that moment, but then it's not, it's the porn video. But then like later on down in the film, it comes back around and you realize, oh wait, the person was going into her room and it was Ming Liang. So I want to talk about that sequence in particular, because I think that's one of my favorite sequences in the whole film, the way how you have that shot, because it's like this like double interconnected, technically breaking, I don't even know what to call it, but I just love how you edit that whole sequence.
Thank you. You're the only one who pick up on that, because we work so hard on that sequence, you know. Yeah, it's the editing, you know, it's the fun thing about editing, playing with perception, you know. And you know, you just thought that it's the same video, and then it's actually, because Ming Liang have been watching the video all the time, maybe a lot of time, so when he walk in their apartment, he's actually thinking about the video, because it's the same room, you know, and he kind of projecting himself as that guy, her boyfriend, you know. So it's so when you see the video, you thought it's the video, and then realize that it's not the video, it's him going into the video. And we were doing a lot of editing just to make sure it's all. And also when he go home, and then Yifang, and you know, I mean, there's three people together, they're doing their own thing, but they looks like they're doing the thing like together. Yeah. You know, so that's a sequence we actually, it was on the script at the beginning. This is the thing I was thinking about doing when I was writing the script. It's some kind of a climax halfway, you know? It's that the thing come together halfway and then things fall apart. Yeah.
I love that entire sequence. That blew my mind. I had to replay because I'm like, yo, this is so good. and then when you talk about it's self-inserting, like both he and Yu Fang do it, and they do it into Monica's life. But then when you see the attack, which is the event that kind of basically started this whole series of, I legit put it in my notes, I'm like, this should have been titled a series of unfortunate events, because everything was like, all of these interactions these people are having with Ming Liang in particular, like their lives start to fall apart in ways that they don't even realize yet because of these brief moments of interactions with him. And you talk about self-insertion, like the most unfortunate event is the slashing, where he's going to attack Yu Feng because it's revealed he sees her as taking Monica away from him. But then Xiao Zhang saves her. And in the moment just before that happens, you don't realize that he's actually thinking he's playing a video game. And that's another moment where he's self-inserted into this moment, into this reality that's not real. It's the same way how he inserted himself into the porn video. He's doing this action, but he's thinking of like he's in a video game, and he's not really thinking of like what's going on around him.
Yeah. He's a filmmaker.
That's what he should do with his imagination instead of stalking people.
Yeah, you know, it's when we go to scouting, we go to location scouting, we look at the room, I'm like, there's something. I mean, I'm a story machine. You know, when I was young, before I go to sleep, there are movies in my head, there are images in my head. So it's, it's not like I'm Ming Liang, but it's just that because I have that kind of, crazy mind, it's just the busy mind.
Yeah.
That I love images. You know, it's so funny that when I was editing, there are some nights when, like, before I slept, I actually go to the whole film in my mind, shot by shot. And sometimes I was editing in my mind, so that the next morning I can tell my editor, like, you know what, let's switch this. So it's the image making thing that I like, you know. So that's the part that I think that you're talking about, you know, like a film medium, like people putting themselves in the film.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same idea. Yeah.
Yes, you're a very visual thinker. I kind of relate to that because when I'm like thinking of certain things, I kind of like imagine things in like a three-dimensional space. So I kind of like that's so I kind of relate to that, which is kind of what that scene reminded me of. It kind of reminded me of a VR game, the way how she was standing in the auditorium and like she's listening to her classical music, which I thought I was like I knew something was gonna go wrong. I'm like, why are you listening to classical music in a crowded place with these big headphones on your ears? Like, girl, you don't do that. Like when I'm outside, I wear one earphone. I don't wear both because I need to hear what's going on around me, like what's going on, ambient noise and
Yeah,
everything.
she has a boyfriend, so she's safe, you know? She feels safe.
Which I guess speaks to Xiao Zhang's character, where she fully, where like she trusted him enough to do something. She felt comfortable enough to do that, you know. So plus kudos for him for instilling that trust in his girlfriend. But so I want to get a bit into the technical aspect of the film. Like we've talked a bit about the editing. I want to talk a bit about the clues that you've dropped in this film. Like one of my favorite is the feather, the pendant that Xiao Zhang gives to her. That intrigued me. So I went back to the scene with the poster, which is the seagull, and I looked up because I'm like, I know this title from somewhere. And I looked up, and I'm like, aha, it's the play by Anton Chekhov. So I wanted to ask you about that because like what the play is about these characters whose lives are interconnected but not fully, and it's kind of like subtext. So like, could you talk a bit about possibly that being an inspiration for a way in how you format the film and possibly like the dialogue of it?
Well, I'm not sure because it's just funny that how people pick up all the clues. I mean, she's an actress. Like Yu Fang is a serious actress, as opposed to Monica is not a good actress. There's a play, and then we were thinking Seagull because the female lead, Nina, it's actually an actress in that play, so that has the meaning of it. And also, there was a monologue we were using for casting, because when we do casting, we didn't ask them to do the co-reading or anything. We just have for Yifan character, we actually give them the seagull like monologue so that they can. We have to make sure she looks like an actress. So this is the bit we use. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really. I mean, that's the only text that we think fit to like Yifang, because we want Yifang to have, like the first time we see her on the stage, we want her to have something, close to her, so when she say the monologue, she's actually talking about herself. So we found a text from the seagull. We thought it was pretty like appropriate, yeah. And that thing is just it's just a prop, that looks
Really?
good, so
So that was just like you were like we have a feather, we'll use this. I was like, oh wait, so now I'm like, I thought too deeply.
no, I mean the feather is just basically, I think it's I mean, because I'm trying to portray Xiao Zhang as something old fashioned, he writes a letter, he's like having flower to the girl. I mean, it's like, so he has this kind of thing. He's very old fashioned, so I'm trying to have this character compared to Ming Liang. Ming Liang is all tech, like technology and new, and he's very old and down to earth. And also they are different kind of love in this story. The first one, of course, old fashioned love. I mean, kissing in the booth, in the phone booth, It's like no one is kissing in the phone booth anymore. So come on, So it's the thing we're trying to play up. The first 20 minutes is so very old-fashioned romantic story.
Yeah, it's like very romantic. Like he's giving her roses, and even like his appearance is what I would consider is like old time romantic trope. Like he went, they met when they were 5 years ago and they were younger. He went away, became a chef on a boat, came back, and he's like, "Do you remember me?" And they're like grand romance starts. He's giving her roses. They're running through the rain like some like some 1950s play. I thought of Singing in the Rain. Actually, that's the film that came to mind there. I was legit waiting for a musical sequence to come through because it's so romantic, so dreamy. And then the film just like takes a completely different direction. I was like, wait, not again what I thought.
Never trust a film. The first 20 minutes is so sweet and so, so happy. Never trust it because 2 hours film,
Yeah, because even the way that Ming Liang is introduced into the film, like riding the bicycle, like it's such an innocuous thing, but then like this scene of him riding a bicycle actually plays a part into how he meets everyone. Like every time he meets all these people, he's on this bicycle, and I'm just like, this bicycle is a portent for bad things to happen. And then speaking of romance and Xiao Zhang, I want to talk a bit about Lady Xiao. So she's interesting because she's this masseuse, and her character is, I think she kind of represents to me a lot of I think people who don't fully understand what's going on in the situation. So there might be like using Ming Liang as an example. He's telling her, oh, I have this girlfriend, and then we broke up. He builds up himself to her, like he makes himself seem like this hero, like this really good guy who looks after the girls that he's interested in. And then he's like, I broke up with one and I'm pursuing another one. And she tells him, girls like to be chased. And I'm like, why are you telling him this? You don't even know if this is true. And but that made me think, like, there are people that will tell men these things and men will take it and run with it. Like they'll misunderstand, like they'll perceive it as something that they should do. Like he literally saw her telling him this as permission. I kind of put it in my notes, like she unknowingly gave him permission to stalk Monica. And because he was like, oh, so I if I want her to love me, I have to pursue her, which turn into stalking. And but there are people that'll be like that, they'll say, oh, if you want a girl to like you, do this, do that. And like when in really truly, like, women don't like these things. We don't like to be pursued. No means no. If a woman does not want to give you her number, she does not have to give you her number. But there are people that would say, oh, you have to be persistent. No. Take the first no and leave. Right? So I want to talk a bit about her character, because also her character has a small, this very small moment where Xiao Liang not Xiao, yeah, Xiao Zhang, he sees her. Is that her that he saw through the window when he went to take his smoke? That was her. I was like, ah, okay.
You picked it up, yeah.
Yeah, it was because the red, and I was like, wait, is this her? And so can you just talk a bit about her character and like your own reasoning behind her character? Because I'm wondering if it's the same thing as mine.
Her character is basically the mother Ming Liang doesn't have. Ming Liang has a drunken mother, like alcoholic mother, and they don't talk to each other because he has to serve her all the time. So she must have been drunk all the time. So he met this mother figure who is like a friend to her, to him. She always like talk to him, be nice to him, encourage him. Also, on the other end, maybe, I mean, you see Lady Xiao has the kids who come in and stole her money, when she was drunk. So in a way, she's also missing her son. So I mean, it's one of those things that, if she has a young, I mean, I'm sure that not all the clients she has is the younger kids. So she must have find him very, friendly, like easy to talk to. She can even make fun of him, so it's good to see him coming back. And then you see he's a young kid, it looks nice, a very good looking kids, must be very good kids. So of course you can encourage him to do, as a mother would ask the kids to do. So, indirectly she didn't know she was encouraging someone crazy. That's the thing I was, that's the thing I thought that like Lady Xiao's character, it's like that. And the bit we cut out is actually Xiao Zhang and Lady Xiao also know each other. That's the thing we didn't put it in because we had a scene of them on the window talking to each other. They're neighbors actually. So yeah, so Lady Xiao's character at first was like some kind of shelter for the broken man. Meaning that she was talking, actually she has a couple of scenes talking to Xiao Zhang. After Yu Feng left, he was a bit down, and actually she was talking to him, but we thought it was a bit too much, and we kind of want Lady Xiao focus on only Ming Liang, so that it's sometimes when you write something on the screenplay, it looks good, but when you shot it, you add it, you put them together. As much as we love Lady Xiao's all the performance on the other scenes, we have to take it out. Yeah, so. It's kind of focused, just the focus Lady Xiao on Ming Liang's world. Yeah. So that's the thing.
She does give that. Like there are mothers who will tell their sons, like they're concerned with their sons' romantic lives, and they'll say these things because they want to be encouraging to their sons. You know, they want to have good relationships. So I see that definitely with her. And also her, I think her, there's, I kind of read a connection between her and the media, in how the media encourages things without considering the consequences. Like for the, and this is one of the last things I want us to talk about, because I don't want to keep you too long. But what to me is where the title Terrorizers really manifests in the film is you have Ming Liang, is he's a terrorizer, but he's a very subtle one. He's like one working in the background. But the real one is the media and society, and how when everything comes to light because of the slashing, like Yu Fang's life gets destroyed. And like the media is terrorizing her, like they're hounding her. She becomes a perpetrator in an act that she had no, where she was the victim. Her and her boyfriend were victims. And like, and Ming Liang like turns it onto her so very, like shows how manipulative he is. Because no one, he said, oh, she stole my girlfriend from me. And they're showing this video of him that he filmed of her and Monica together. And my first thought is like, why would you even show this? These are two women that are clearly being filmed secretly. This is an invasion of their privacy. And you're showing this on the news and on social media. And it kind of shows how the social media and the news media in themselves terrorize people. And like, they're only concerned about the story and about these what they perceive as reality. Like they didn't listen to Yu Fang and Monica. She's gone to Australia, so she's leaving Yu Fang to handle all this by herself. So just talk a bit about the media and social media, how that plays into the terrorizing of people.
Yeah, I mean, terrorizers, it's more than one. Mm-hmm. People, of course, would think terrorizer is Ming Liang. Mm-hmm. Of course, he is a terrorizer. But the thing is, like I said before, I mean, people are not bad. People just make bad things. You know, they are the product of society. And media tend to sensationalize a lot of things. You know, when they grab something easy, they can just, you know. And then, I mean, in Taiwan, news are pretty bad because they basically just, anything on YouTube, they just put it on the news. It's worse than what you think. So there's no border. It's just anything, you know, anything they think people are going to watch, they just put it on. So, for me, the terrorizers talks, you know, I mean, imply a lot of things. You know, it's Ming Liang, it's video game, it's the media, it's could be the repressions, you know, maybe the sex education, you know, maybe the parents' expectation, all that thing just to make a young, you know, those young kids to have a lot of burdens. And so I mean, like for me, the major thing is not the slashing. I think the major thing is that they don't know how come the video, I mean, like how come they got captured by the video, and then her father was asking about, you know, you just make the wrong thing. You know, you just, you know, we cannot trust you. I mean, even if we trust you, there's a lot of things I have to take care of, you know. So that's life. You know, like a lot of things is not what you can control. And it just happened to be like bad luck, I think. Yeah. So
yeah, it's bad luck. But like we're talking about the title terrorism, like for me as a woman, like, for me, and this is where I say the film is kind of like a psychological thriller. It's like for a lot of women, like we do fear of being stalked and of being harassed in public. And these are things that are happening in the film. But then that's like where for me, I'm just like, this is something I've had that experience where I've been harassed. You know, I've had men like follow me home from school when I was a teenager and like these kind of things. So that's where like that's where that very subtle hint of like the horror aspect for me came in, because like, you never know, right? You don't know who this person is who's following you. You don't know how many people are watching you. And the media kind of does the same thing in like, you, like we have all of these cameras. You don't know who's filming you out in public. You don't know who's using their camera phone to film you. Like when I'm on the train, I'm always looking around to see who's holding up a camera. I'm like, are they just playing on their phone? Or are they like filming me? And like, and I become so conscious of that. Like every time I'm out in public with my phone, I hold my phone down so that the person doesn't think I'm filming them. Like I never hold my phone up like this. I actually hold it down to look down. And that's some, and so like the film kind of like made me think of that, like how women are always have to be on guard almost all the time, because we know how vulnerable we are and we don't know what people's intentions are.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have privacy anymore, you know? Mm. It's like wherever you go, I mean, there's a lot of CCTV cameras now. I mean, it's in Taiwan, it's you have CCTV every block, so people can supposedly catch the bad guy. But, you know, when the media get hold of something else, they can just bribe the police. For some reason, they can get access to all the material they want and show on TV, you know, without... without thinking how the person's going to feel, you know, you just basically, it's the invasion of the privacy also. I mean, the same thing with internet, it's the same idea. Internet is basically invasion of your privacy, you know? So that's, I mean, it's a big picture, you know, but I mean, the mainly for me, it's a theme of how loneliness people are now, you know, they want, you know, I mean, they have, I mean, like family doesn't live with them. They don't live with the family. They don't have friends, or their friends are on Facebook, Instagram. So they don't interact with each other anymore. You know, not much, especially after this COVID thing. People are not going to even talk to, you know, it just, I mean, everywhere is the mask. You don't see the face now. Your face got cut off and you're losing your face. You know, it used to be the whole face. Now you are. Your mouth is gone, and just this is scary, you know. This is how the society is heading to right now.
It's been a crazy two years period of adjustment, and we're still adjusting because this thing is not going to end anytime soon with how irresponsible people are being.
I know.
Again, so I guess we'll wrap up now because we've been talking for quite a while, but I appreciate you talking to me so much. Like, I really enjoyed the film, as you can tell.
I just think it's
so smart and so well done and so well constructed. So, like, amazing. Like, congrats to you and to your team. Like, who's your editor? Because I have to ask, who's your editor?
I actually co-edit with someone else. So I co-wrote, co-edit also. She's just a kid. She's only 23 years old. Ooh, 23, nice. 24. Yeah. And she was the assistant editor on my last film. At first she was just an assistant editor, and I kind of promote her to be my co-editor from my last film. And then this time I asked her to come in, and then she read the script like before shooting. She actually gave me some idea about what to do. You know, and she's quite smart. Yeah. And I think the good thing always, you know, the good thing about this film is my co-writer, it's female.
Yeah.
My co-editor is female. So it's good when you deal with this kind of subject matter, it's good to have female perspective. You know, they and also I think it's, you know, when you have a female editor edit things, some of the stuff could be, some of the tiny stuff is very well taken care of, you know. I mean, the man cannot do that, you know. They have a way of expressing thing that you cannot, I mean, even I cannot do that. So I think it's good that sometimes you work with like a female editor or like writer when you write story like this, you know, especially you have a lot of female characters. Yeah.
No, for sure, because there's a lot of nuance. There's, I think, like, very subtle nuances to some of the editing, especially in particular with regards to Monica and Yufeng. So, like, Yufeng, so that really does come clear. What's her, do you mind sharing her name?
Li Hui.
Li Hui? Like, congrats.
Li Hui.
You both did a fantastic job.
Thank you. I'm happy you like it, yeah.
I really do.
I'm very happy.
I was at the, when I finished watching it, I went into our group chat. I'm like, this film is ridiculously good. I was like, the editing is flawless. Yeah. Oh my God. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me. Cause I'm not sure what time it is there, but I do appreciate this time. And I know you must be like tired from doing all like festival coverage. Cause I know festival season, even if you're doing it virtually, is exhausting.
It's okay. As long as you have a lot of questions, you know, it's not like you are trying to do your job, which is good. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a nice nighttime there. Is it nighttime there?
Yeah, it's nighttime. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so have a good day, and I hope you have a good the rest of your week is great. So everyone, thank you for listening to another episode of Carolyn Talks. This was a fantastic discussion with writer and director Ho Wee Ding for his film Terrorizers, which screened at the 2021 Toronto International Film Festival. When and whenever it's available to be seen by general audiences, if it goes on a digital platform, I hope it does. Please watch this. It's an extremely entertaining and like very smartly directed and constructed film. And I'm sure it will create a lot of discussions. I will also have other interviews with other creatives from this year's TIFF. And you can find my interviews and coverage for the 2021 New York Asian Film Festival and Fantasia International Film Festival on But Why Though podcast.com, as well as in Observer. For Observer, I interviewed director and co-writer Cho Jin Woo for his film Ryuksa, a teaser. And for But Why Though podcast.com, there's interviews with Bang Mina for her film. She's the lead actress in the film Snowball. And I spoke to writer and director Nam Kung Sung for her film 10 Months. And I will also have a couple other interviews for TIFF coming up as well. I've done, you can go on my YouTube channel under my name, Carolyn Hines, that's H-I-N-D-S, and find more Carolyn Talks interviews with creatives in the film and television industry, as well as for Asian dramas, there is Beyond the Romance, where I discuss the latest Korean, Japanese, Chinese, Taiwanese, all types of dramas that I'm watching, as well as discussions with my friends and fellow drama fans. I recently did one for Goblin, also known as The Guardian, The Lonely and Great God, which is my all-time favorite Korean drama. You can find that discussion there, as well as those for Cinderella and the Foreign Nights and others. And you can find, let me see what else I want to say. And you can also look up the new episode of So Here's What Happened for the August. So you can also find the new episode of So Here's What Happened. You can also find Beyond the Romance in podcast format on different podcast streaming platforms, as well as on butwhythepodcast.com. Follow me on social media at CarrieCNH12, that's CarrieCNH12. You can follow my hashtags Dramas with Carrie, where I live tweet the dramas I'm currently watching on Netflix or Viki. And you can also follow the hashtag Saturday Night Sci-Fi, which is for every Saturday night, me and my co-host at 10 p.m. Eastern live tweet different TV shows, films from across the world on different streaming platforms like Disney Plus, Netflix, Amazon Prime, sorry. And we have a lot of fun interacting with, I call them my Saturday Night Sci-Fi peeps, our crew. And it's been a blast for the last 3.5 years, going into 4 years at the end of 2021. And it's been amazing. You can look to see what projects we'll be live tweeting. Just look up the hashtag and you can find announcements for upcoming live tweets. And I think that is it. Again, this was a fantastic conversation with Ho Wee Ding. I really appreciate him taking the time to talk with me, and I can't wait to see what he does next. I have to look up his other films because I think I've seen The Last City, but I am not sure, so I'm gonna have to refresh my memory. I'm definitely gonna watch them though, because like his mind. Again, thank you for listening to this episode of Carolyn Talks. Everyone, please stay safe.